Hello, Final Fantasy lovers. I am Phil Svitek, and this past week I have finished up Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And because of that, I obviously wanted to talk about it, much like other people who have finished the game, because there's a lot to ponder, there's a lot of questions, a lot of emotions, and things of that nature. And so, you know, I've seen various videos online on YouTube kind of breaking down the various things, and most of it's related to what happened at the ending. And I'll link to a few of those that I found very beneficial, but I want to approach it more from the totality of the narrative and figure out what worked for me, what perhaps didn't, and more importantly, if it didn't, why I don't think it resonated as much and what could have perhaps been an improvement for that. And, you know, I want to do this because I love the games, right? I've played the original back when, not right when it came out, but, you know, around that time. And, you know, I revisit it every so often. It's definitely one of my favorite video games. And then that drew my love to Final Fantasy in general. So, I played 8, 9, 10. And then it kind of gets intermittent a little bit. I recently played 16 and stuff like that. Obviously, I played Remake when that came out, and now Rebirth. So that's kind of my history with all of this. But also, just to mention, I did see Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, both the sort of early version and then the complete version, as they call it, or something like that. And while I've not played Crisis Core or those ones, I'm overall familiar with those storylines and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm not an expert, you know, of all of it, but certainly I know enough, right, in that way. And because of that, you can probably guess that this is going to be very spoiler-filled, right? And I want to talk full spoilers, not just about, you know, Remake and Rebirth, but also the original game and perhaps some stuff into Advent Children, as well, you know, because I think in order to look at this story and perhaps where it's headed, you need all those things, right? Starting off, though, I want to say I did love the deeper characterizations of this entire story, right? Remake made me really fall in love with those four main characters initially that we got, you know, Cloud, Tifa, Aerith, and of course, Barret. And now, as we expand the scope, you know, now Red 13 is playable. We get much more of Yuffie, although, you know, with Interlude, that kind of allowed us to fall in love with Yuffie in Remake. And yeah, even ones like Cait Sith. I've never really liked Cait Sith. And here, I was much more drawn to him, right? And I thought they also humanized Cid a lot more, where he's not just this overbearing asshole. And Vincent Valentine, you know, we get very little of him, but you know, it's kind of very fitting. It's what you would want. I don't know. It's what I wanted. And yeah, the voice actors do a fantastic job of bringing these characters to life. So found that to be fantastic. But let's dive into the story, okay? Most of it, I felt, could have benefited from dramatic irony. You know, at the end of Remake, the big central theme or you know, idea was the 7 seconds, you know, and what will Cloud do with it. And it's kind of hinted, like, it became this unspoken thing between fans and the video game of, like, will Aerith live, will Aerith die, can you prevent it, can you not? But I'm sort of murky on, what does Cloud know? Like, does he know what that means? Does Aerith know what that means? Do any of them know what that means? And also, if you're just a first-time player, like, if you literally picked up Remake, and God forbid you picked up Rebirth as your first, like, entry point into all of this, like, what the hell would you be thinking? You know, and I think, like, Aerith's death in the original video game was the biggest shocker ever, right? And it's taken on this iconic legendary status that at that point it's like you're not going to hide that, but you're working on this like meta level of like, we know that this is and so forth, but why not just make it part of the game where the characters are having to grapple with this of trying to save. Like, we know at the end of the first one that obviously the point was to defy reality. But now I kind of need them to know what's the reality that they're trying to defy, right? And, you know, that could be a very pivotal thing of, okay, you know, everyone wants to save Aerith and things like that, but as time goes by, maybe she realizes, and I think that ultimately is where the ending sort of lands, is Aerith realizes that she has to do this, otherwise there's no moving forward. There's no saving the planet without her death. That is the only option, regardless of the timeline, you know, whatever timeline they may be in, this always has to occur in order for there to be a chance. And yes, you can get, you can explore that idea in the third one, but I felt like they kept setting up question after question after question, and you're in the middle part of this. You kind of have to start answering some of those questions a little bit and grappling with that instead of just having, you know, trying to pull the rug out from underneath people. And I think for me, having more dramatic irony would have helped, you know, in that respect. So, you know, I think it does a great job with the backstories, but it tries to be too much. Hey, like, Remake was perfect in the sense that it stuck enough to what the original was while also having enough changes. Here, it tries to do the same, and it's like, no, the whole point of the first one was you're changing things up, right? And so that's the thing. It's like we're still moving along of like introducing, as opposed to now kind of starting to solidify stuff. So yeah, that for me just was a misstep, right? And certainly other people have talked about the ending in particular having lost that emotional weight. And ultimately, I don't think there's anything wrong with the ending as, like, if you just take the ending, I think it could have been very well done and still had that emotional weight if you just had, if you front layered it a little bit, because, it becomes kind of like this head spinning type of scenario, and we're trying to figure out what is happening, whereas, like, if we just knew a couple of those elements going into it, the head spinning would be more of an emotional roller coaster rather than us trying to figure out what's going on, right? And that includes what's happening with the black materia, what's happening with the white materia, and all that stuff. And speaking to that effect, you know, Cloud's past is also very much in question throughout this whole thing. And I think there's an inconsistency there where the rest of the party starts to pick up on the idea that there's something wrong with him, you know? They don't necessarily know what it is. They just kind of equate it to the Mako degradation. But they still essentially let him, they're still too trusting of Cloud in that way. I mean, he pushed off Tifa. And yes, there was that reconciliation, but he essentially tried to kill her because he was being possessed by Sephiroth. And what I also wonder is the whole Zack storyline, you know, because when he's having that moment, once Tifa is rescued from the live stream, you know, he says, it's like, I've got all these memories. I don't even know whose they are, blah, blah, blah. And that's very much, you know, hinting at the idea that he's taken on Zack's memories, right? The whole crux of the first the original video game was that he's constructed his own identity with Zack's identity, and where's the truth, where's the lie. And that's where I felt like the Tifa and Cloud of It moment, where he's essentially rejecting her as being alive, thanks to Sephiroth's influence, I felt like that's kind of what it would reveal to. Now, in hindsight, I think this is more about that there's that great connection to Sephiroth and Cloud, of course. But again, to what end? Because they kind of are too trusting of him for my liking, letting him do X, Y, and Z. You know? Also, when it comes to Zack, again, if you didn't play the original, and the original doesn't necessarily give you too much there anyway, you have to really play like Crisis Core to get Zack's the backstory that they're fully playing with here. You know, what I found was interesting was in Nibelheim, when we're in present day, Cloud and Tifa make it a big point where Cloud remembers Zack. Now, what is the significance of that? It's not quite clear in that way. You're only left with speculation. And Tifa takes it upon herself to be like, okay, I'll be the one to tell Aerith. And she does so, but they don't tell Cloud about it. Now, when I say this, the only reason you would even know that is, so that idea is revealed in the Gold Saucer dates. And you only find that out if you take Tifa or Aerith on a date. And if you take one of them, you know, Cloud will essentially ask about it. They'll lie, but you'll get this little glimpse of the truth where Tifa mentions it to Aerith. And it's a very small clip. So, number one, they didn't feel it was important to have, like, you know, someone could skip over this. For example, I ended up going on a date with Barrett, but what I did do was then literally YouTubed all the Gold Saucer dates to see this and see all the different possibilities, which I thought were well done for all the reasons. I thought, in particular, I thought Yuffie's was pretty fun. That was a good date scenario for sure. With the benefit of hindsight now, the Tifa and Cloud storyline is very tragic to me because it shows that, I mean, she loves him, right? And in many ways, they make the Aerith Cloud sort of not outright definitive, but like as close to definitive as you can get, right? But anyway, I digress. The point being, Tifa and Aerith speak, but it's an optional thing that you know you could very well miss. And what we do see is a very short snippet of that interaction. So again, it's just one of those things like you're withholding this information as opposed to just it's okay to leave more breadcrumbs, I think, you know, especially in part two, and there's only going to be three parts. But I will say I did really love the bond between an Aerith and Tifa. I thought, you know, they really do care for each other. You could see that. And that plays really well. At the end, you could see how gutted Tifa really is at the loss of Aerith. You know? So it's interesting to see in that way. What I also found very, well, when you look at the Zack of it all, right, he's also kind of like in a Tifa position where he's looking at it, and Marlene tells him that essentially Aerith likes Cloud. And I wonder how he truly feels about this. Like, it seems like he kind of accepts it of like, okay, you know, she's moved on from me. She's moved on to Cloud. I like Cloud. So I support this relationship. just as a tiny prediction, like I think, you know, the romance happy ending to this all for me would be that Zach ultimately dies in whatever way, whether it's sacrifice and or tragic, something like that, and he's reunited with Aerith, you know, in the spiritual plane, if we want to call it that, with the life stream, right? And Aerith gives Cloud permission, you know, to fall in love with Tifa. And that way, like, that to me is the wrapping of the bow. And we do get Zach and Aerith together as spiritual beings in Advent Children, of course. So it's not that far of a stretch, you know, in that respect. And, you know, it's kind of like the idea that we can have multiple loves in our life. And, you know, it just circumstance and timing all play into it. And, you know, Aerith was always meant to be with Zach and Tifa was always meant to be with Cloud and vice versa, right? So in that way, I don't know, that feels like a satisfying love ending to me. But let's talk about the Sephiroth of it all. As I mentioned at the top, the idea of, okay, you know, he's telling Cloud that he's got 7 seconds to do something. What will he do with it? We don't quite know what that means. And here in particular, we're leading up to the Temple of the Ancients, which in the original, that was still part of like Disc 1. And it is in the Temple of the Ancients that you find out Sephiroth's ultimate plan, which is to summon Meteor. And the Meteor itself is a part of what's going on in Zack's timeline and kind of hinted at in other ways. But I wonder, this is something, like, I tried to really look this up. I tried to, like, dig through this. Like, is there a mention of the Meteor in Remake and this one? I couldn't find it. Like, I know, I see it hinted at, but nothing's, like, explicitly stated of, like, you know, the whole original plan of it is for him to summon Meteor, so that way there can be a dent in the Earth, the live stream goes to heal itself, he'll suck up the live stream and, you know, being imbued by its power, right? That's the original aspect of it. That's what the, you know, and the reunion and stuff like that, he's calling everyone to that spot. Here, it's very much, you get the sense that, obviously, Cloud is doing Sephiroth's bidding, but to what end, right? The idea of the Black Materia doesn't come up until way further in the game. Obviously, I know about the Meteor and stuff like that, but if you're a first-time gamer without the benefit of the original, like, what do you think's going on? And we get, at the end, Sephiroth's plan of, okay, he wants to essentially unite all worlds and become, you know, this multiverse deity, if you will, and things like that. But the issue that I have with it is it's always this kicking him down the line as opposed to having him be truly active. I mean, I'd be curious to know how many times he literally says, I'm waiting, I'm waiting, I'm waiting, I'm waiting. And we get to the end, and yes, it's a very dramatic boss fight. I enjoyed it. But he essentially seems to lick his wounds and, all right, I'm going to go, right? Yes, I understand, like, he underestimated Aerith, but he's going to lick his wounds and go. And if he underestimated Aerith, and he's just going to go, why? Like, well, you know, how is he going to reset himself? Because in the first one, we fought Sephiroth, and he chose to let us live in that moment as well. So you get the sense that Cloud is very much a needed puppet. And if anything, it's like you've got the Black Whispers and the White Whispers. And for all intents and purposes, you know, the Black Whispers work for Sephiroth, right? And people have kind of noted that as a theory, and it seems to be very much supported, right? And then you've got the White Whispers, which operate with the planet. And by extension, certainly by the end, it's like, okay, they're Aerith's whispers, right? So if that's the case, then Cloud, very much as indicated, you know, towards the end, you know, he's the White Whispers and the Black Whispers are essentially fighting over him, and he's got no agency, right? So it's really comes down to Aerith versus Sephiroth. And for all that, it's like, what is the significance to Sephiroth? Like, why does he need Cloud? Why did it have to be Cloud that killed Aerith and so forth? And also, now, if Aerith accepts her death, then isn't that a good thing for our party and not Sephiroth, right? And of course, there's the third video game where, you know, all this stuff can be explored. But I just feel like we've unraveled even more. And so depending on what happens in the third, it'll really either deliver or it could be a major disappointment. And I hope not, because for my money's worth at this point in time, I liked Rebirth, but I didn't love it, unfortunately. Like, there was a lot of stuff that just didn't all add up, right? You know, like, I really loved the modern update to Junon, but when Rufus is talking with Cloud and things like that, it felt convoluted, and it's like, where's this going? And I think that was a major thing of it, was there wasn't a fully clear directed focus from start to finish. And I think part of that had to do with, there was definitely a crap ton of side quests. You know, even like, for example, like small things within small things. So for example, when you find, you know, life stream crystals, whatever we're calling it. And this is part of like Chadley's intel, right? You find these life springs, and cool. Then you have to like hit triangle as the circle constricts, and you have to match it, and you have to do it three times. It's like, why? Just, I found the life spring. Like, can we just move on in that way? Just felt too much of this, and because of that, I know I lost focus narratively. Now, sure, there's definitely a version of this where I could just breeze through it, and, you know, focus on the storyline. But historically for me, if I do that and I get to the end, then I'm simply not strong enough to actually win. In fact, like, the final boss fight, I was on level 49 with most of my characters, maybe one or two were at 48. And there was a couple times I got to the final fight with Aerith and Cloud taking on Sephiroth. But I had trouble with it. Like, I kept dying. It took me like maybe 7 or 8 tries to really beat the game. And it was frustrating. Like, that was a lot of hours sunk into just, I was like, and I didn't know that the Aerith, for the most part, I did the video game without any walkthroughs, primarily because when I started, they didn't really, you know, a lot of them were still being formulated. A couple times, like, for example, in Costa del Sol, you have to do that dumb game where you have to take these pictures. And it's like, where were these pictures? And on one of them, I knew where the picture was. But for some, you know, you also, again, talk about, like, the side quest within, like, a side quest almost. You have to focus the camera that you have a specific percentage. And I couldn't get it. I was like, why is this not working for me? So it was frustrating. So I did look up, like, minor things here and there, but for the most part, I did this without a walkthrough, so I certainly didn't know that the Aerith and Cloud against Sephiroth fight would be the final stage of that, you know? But yeah, all that to say, it took me a couple of tries to win out at the end, and the greater point of it being that, you know, that was me I don't know if level 50 is the highest like it was in Remake. I get the feeling that it probably is. And so, without having done as many side quests as I did, I don't think I would have stood a chance, And for the most part, whenever I got to a new region, I would try to explore it as much as possible. And then certainly by the end, once you get the tiny Bronco and you can kind of traverse through the various regions, that was an option, but I was like, okay, at that point I was like, I'm strong enough where I'll say before heading into the Temple of the Ancients, but I don't need to do the side quest. Like at that point I'd sunk in enough hours into the game. I was like, I'm just gonna go for it. I will say I really love the Temple of the Ancients. I thought that was really well done. And again, like all these things individually as expanded were great. I just don't think they quite hit narratively on the whole. Another aspect of it was like the Shinran weapons, right? Like they were after the Mako of the weapons. And I guess part of it was, well, they wanted to harness that Mako, but they were also looking for the Promised Land. But then per Sephiroth's bidding, Rufus got sidetracked with the war against Wu Tai. So there's a lot of stuff there that I just think gets too splintered off. And I don't know. It'll really come down to how this third game goes. Which is all speculation. But, I remain optimistic. But for the most part, this one didn't quite land as well for me. I thought Remake was much more narratively paced, even with its side quests. I thought, okay, they made sense in the moment and they weren't overbearing. And I get it, at the end of the day, the vibrancy of these worlds was on full display. And I gotta imagine, hey, if we're gonna go ahead and literally create all these regions down to like these blades of grass, we're gonna make sure you spend time in them, So I think that's where that stems from. But I'm a gamer that, especially with these games, I approach it more from the narrative standpoint, and that the too many side quests seem to lose out on that focus a little bit. And as I said, I just had also overall some bigger issues with the narrative here. These are my various thoughts on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I know some of them can be very helter-skelter. And certainly in comparison to a lot of these other great videos that I've linked to down below, that talk about, very succinct things and things like that. But I just want to process, my emotions through it all. Again, there's other stuff that I could talk about, but these were the main things that I want to get off my chest and ultimately start a dialogue, right? I've been watching these other videos and I think they're great, but it didn't feel whole and satisfying to just simply comment, because I certainly don't think it would have expressed the length and breadth of all these thoughts that were in my head. So, I encourage you to comment with your thoughts or make a video, post it and then link to it in the comment section. I'll check it out. I love speaking with fans. My friends themselves don't play these video games, so it's tough in that way. And I just ultimately want somebody to bounce ideas about this video game that means so much. And any criticism that I do have for the big video game, it's because it comes from a loving place, right? And so forth. Now, not Precious, where they can't change things and stuff like that. And I do think there's still a great opportunity, as I've mentioned before, for the third one to really hit home and in hindsight make this one like, oh wow, that's perfect. I get why they did X, Y, and Z. But as just like a standalone at the moment, it doesn't quite hit as much as I would love to. But I will say this: this is also a reaction just based off the first playthrough. There's a lot to process. It took me a couple weeks, unlike with the first video game where I literally just was able to dedicate 1 week to to get through it. This one took me a couple weeks. But I do want to go back and play it just for the story from start to finish and see what other new observations I may get. And see how maybe it makes me feel a little bit different, for good or bad, about it based on that. Anyway, that's what I have. Thank you so much, truly, for taking time to tune in. I appreciate you and look forward to hearing from you.